framework of South Africa. people who say the Sangha is we are responsible for the proclaimed nation of Godhead. There's a legislative process which one has to go through in terms of proclaiming a road as a national road network. But also we need to understand that the network in South Africa, and we will talk later on about the extent of the network in South Africa, as to how it is divided between the national sphere of government, the provincial sphere, and the third sphere, which is our municipal sphere of government. So each bit of the road that we have are covered by a particular sphere of government. Just to remind people that Sangha has been established in terms of Act No. 7 of 1998. It was an act of parliament which has established Sangha, but we are also registered in terms of the Company Act. And this was long before the Public Finance Management Act came into being. One of the drivers, the things that falls behind the issue about registering Sangha as a limited company, that is, of course, to make sure that the Sangha is treated no different like any other company in South Africa when it comes to the performance required of Sangha, or that for the aim for any kind of pension that has to be applied in terms of the appropriate legislation. The mandate of Sangha, to my mind, is a very simple one, that you have to maintain, upgrade, you know, the roads. But the one thing that people tend to forget, that the mandate does include that you have to fund the national road network as well. So the funding that Sangha depends on is not as dependent on the national treasury, on the fiscus. We have that mandate per legislation to say that we have to look at other sources of income as well to fund the national road. And it's very clear as well in the mandate to say that we can levy tolls to service the toll roads. And let me also express to the House of India that the members may not be aware. We are not, as Sangha, allowed to use non-toll money that comes from the fiscus, from national treasury, on toll roads and vice versa. That is in terms of our legislation. We are not allowed to do that. They're two completely separate distinct pots of money. And you will see in the annual report, although the report is a consolidated report that you will find, but the finance are dealt in two different parts as far as the toll roads and non-toll roads are concerned. Sangha is also not allowed to borrow any money for which it cannot derive an income from that particular road. Now, what's the relationship between Sangha, our minister, what is the governance structure of Sangha? And the top of the pile sits our minister, but also the regulator. As far as Sangha is concerned, we then have a board, which is like any company's board, which is appointed by the shareholder of the board, but we also have a space on the board for a representative of the Minister of Finance, so we do have somebody sitting from National Trade on the board as well, and the Chief Executive Officer and the rest of the staff at Sangha. Now, yet a thing that has come up that people don't also always take into account, that South Africa is the 10th largest road network in the world. And this is not something that Sangha has done, it has come up from the World Economic Forum, including that we have the 18th, so in the top 20 in the world as far as the paved road network is concerned. And I trust and I hope that the members of OEA will recognize the extent of that particular effort that we have for South African incorporation. It's estimated that the replacement cost of this particular asset is well over 2 trillion rand. That is what the replacement cost should be, over 2 trillion rand. Now, if you look at our budget, our annual budget, I think it's just over 1 trillion rand. So if we don't maintain this road network, if we don't maintain it, I think you all will understand as to what the consequences are, and we will talk a little bit more that is entirely road network described as I showed you previously. SANRAL is responsible for just, as you can see, over 21,000 kilometers of roads. Then we have the nine provinces in terms of the split between the paved road. It's on slide 7. The paved road for the nine provinces and the gravel roads, it's a total of just over 273,000 kilometers of roads. In Mexico, they have amongst themselves 66,000 kilometers of roads split up into a paved network of 51,000 kilometers and a gravel of just over 14,500 kilometers. Then we have the rest of the other municipalities. They look about 257,000 kilometers of roads. Now, that's a total of 618,000 kilometers of roads, give or take a few kilometers on either side. 618,000 kilometers for which we can show somewhere along the line in some archive there will be a piece of paper to show as to who owns that particular road. Now when I talk about the archive or the piece of paper, that means the deeds office and the Surveyor General's office. So it will be there. But the one next figure that we need to look at, right, is what we call the unproclaimed. And this is an estimate of 132,000 kilometers, for which nobody is taking ownership of currently. Nobody. And these are mainly, these are the roads in our informal settlements. And those are areas perhaps which are the most needy amongst us in terms of trying to fund the road infrastructure that we require. So we have in total, by the time we age that 132,000 kilometers, it's 131,919 before somebody tells me he can't inflating the numbers. We haven't got to CPI yet. So in round figures, it's 750,000 kilometers. But let's concentrate on the 618,000 kilometers of those. And what we've done over the years, we checked with all the provinces and the metros, and we decided to look at what we call the economic arches of South Africa. That shows on the next slide. We identified about 34 to 35,000 kilometers of road, what we call the primary road network of South Africa. And within the primary road network of South Africa, there's about 20,000 kilometers of road that we regard as the strategic road network. Now the strategic road network, the significance of this is simply borne out by the fact in terms of the amount of freight that moves on the national road network. And this is also studied, which is confirmed by studies which are done by Transnet themselves. This is not again the work that only the standard has done. 75% of freight, long distance freight, moves on this national road network alone. Now I can ask a question, pose a question, but probably will regard it as a rhetorical question, because if I have a simple question, that what will happen that if we don't maintain this national road network in the condition that we need to the economy of South Africa? What are the consequences of it? I mean, simply illustrate that with an example that if we don't maintain the main drag, as I call it, between Johannesburg and our seaport in Durban, what will be the consequences for the economy of South Africa? We can tell you as to how the economy of South Africa is doing, but simply by monitoring the traffic on the road. You can see that. We can tell you as what happened with the financial crisis hit us over there by monitoring the traffic in terms of moving it. I'm talking about the heavy goods traffic now, as opposed to light vehicles. The significant importance of this particular road network, I appeal to the honorable members, that should be recognized. And again, let me also make another appeal to the honorable members over here. But if we think about the economy and the jobs that we need to create in our country, etc., please let us not try and ignore the elephant in the room in terms of how do we fund our road network in South Africa. How do we fund the road network? Let's not try and push it around between us over here. Let's have an honest debate in terms of how do we do that, but bearing in mind the importance and the significance we're waiting for those things. We very much in support of the improvement that has been envisaged for our rail network, and we're looking forward to see some of the hazardous goods, especially the hazardous goods, which move on our road right now, which are transported on our roads, should go onto the rail network where they belong. They don't belong on the road network. Let's be clear about that first. But in the meantime, let's assume that the 5-year, 7-year program, I hope and I trust that the honorable members will agree with me, we don't have the luxury to turn around and say, fine, we're going to wait while the road rail network has been improved, we're not going to do anything to the roads. We're going to let the congestion build and we're going to let the road network deteriorate. I hope that is not the view that any one of us will hold, or China Express, irrespective of the differences that people may have in terms of how do we fund the roads. But we need to take into account the disparity, the diverse demands that are always being made on a very small take that we have, and I'm talking about the national take now in terms of our budget. When we talk about the funding, and I will probably come back to this one or the other, let me just pose a question. I don't ever hear people cut the bus subsidies. In Gauteng alone, we spend about just under a billion rand on bus subsidies. I never hear that. They give us a free road and cut the bus subsidies. That's not what Sunrun is proposing. Let me make that also very, very clear. That is not what Sunrun is proposing. I'm just merely posing a question over here. Because sometimes people tend to forget. And at Sunrun, we don't make policy. We implement government policy. We really implement government policy. Policy is made by the honorable members in this particular room, among, together with various other people, by the elected representatives of our country. We a messenger as far as our government is concerned, and we will hopefully always implement our policies to the best of our ability. This is the road network of Sunrail, which has grown over the years. When we started 16 years ago, in 1998, we had about 6,800 kilometers of roads. Today, as I said early on, we've got just over 21,000 kilometers of roads in that region. And the way the network has grown is mainly by the incorporation from the provinces of the road network. About a month ago, we just incorporated just about 1,400 kilometers of roads. We're busy measuring that share. It may be slightly higher, maybe lower, but about 1,400 kilometers of roads from the Limpopo province. And this slide, which is slide 10, actually shows the breakdown of the road. If you recall, we had earlier on showed the slide in terms of what the total size of the road network is. And then we talk about the 618,801 kilometers of road. I'm not including for the moment the unclaimed portion of the road network. And if you look at this, and if you do the sums of the day, you will find there's 3,128 kilometers of road sector in South Africa. After the 618,000, nearly 619,000 kilometers of road. The rest of the road network, if you take away the 3,000 kilometers of road, score for 615,000 kilometers of road, is funded through the fiscus. It comes from the general taxation. And hopefully that, you know, I will be able to discuss the members later on when I show some of the slides in terms of the crucial role that the alternative sources of funding play in terms of maintaining our national road network, which are the economic arches of South Africa. In terms of Sunrail network of 221,403 kilometers, we can see an engineer put the 3 kilometers over there. We have 15%, which is part of it. 15%. 85%. And that's the vast majority by any account. 85% of the road network. More than the two-thirds majority people look at. 85% of our road network is non-government. And that one, and every other department, legal cutting hands, National Treasury on an annual basis. Now, I must give credit to National Treasury, although they can give us exactly what we need, and I will show a slide on that as well in this presentation, but they do tend to make an adjustment where we at least meet our maintenance requirements. So please bear in mind, Sunrise portfolio, 50% of it is funded through the toll road portfolio, and that's what it is. That's the money that we're going to raise, like everybody else in the markets, and then there's 85% of it which comes up. And also, like I stated earlier, this may make me remind the honourable members, we are not allowed to take toll road money and spend it on non-toll road and vice versa. That's in green things. We're not allowed to do that. So the fact that we read occasionally from the press, it comes up to say that, you know, what's happening to this money, etc., that we're using the money from A to B, please look at our annual reports and you'll find exactly as to where the expenditure is going. Like all companies, we have a vision, mission, and we have core values. I just want to talk about our vision. You see that we talk about the product. We recognize as a world leader in the provision of a superior primary road network in Southern Africa. Honourable members, I hope that you agree with me that we in South Africa are not an island. We have neighbours. We have traffic which comes from our neighbouring countries as well into that. We belong to the Southern African development community as a whole. We participate as Sunrise in their together with our colleagues from the department and our other sister agencies. Are we an active member of the Association of Southern African National Roads Agencies? So our listening belief is that we have to look at the road network in terms of Southern Africa and not just South Africa. Because we have traffic coming all the way. I know that on our roads we've seen this, that we have traffic coming onto our roads all the way from the DRC as well. Travel all over there, they do come and do their business. Now, one of our missions is always been, and this has been going on for a long time, we recognize that we are custodian of a public good. We are committed to the advancement of the Southern African community through various objectives and not over there. Now, of course, we talk about a highly motivated and professional team, and if I may, Honorable Chair, with your permission, make use of the opportunity to say thank you to my team. They stayed with me through thick and thin for the last few years that we had. We don't have a high staff turnover, and either we're just a bunch of fools in the agency, or we're really dedicated and committed to just doing the best that we can to the best of our ability for South Africa Incorporated. State of the art technology. Let me go advance. Let me again make use of this opportunity, especially to the new members. Some of you have heard me say this before. To the new members of this portfolio committee, please come and see some of the stuff that we do. Come and visit the much listening COC center that we have. Come and see what's happening over there. Come look at the technology over there that we have. It's cutting edge. And let me also assure the House that 90% of that was developed in South Africa. Not abroad. I mean, these are some of the challenges that we face in our country with any technology. We're very good in terms of trying to use our smartphones. I don't know how many of us these days don't get a smartphone. But as soon as some government department or a state entity starts to use state-of-the-art technology, we question the need for that. And this state-of-the-art technology is also helping us that we use it. Not only in Gauteng, but also here, I'm sure the honorable members, when you travel on the roads here in the Western Cape, you see the variable message signs. You also can get traffic information if you register on Twitter. As to live traffic information on Twitter as well, you can get in Gauteng, here in the Western Cape, and in KZN. And one day we'd like to roll out this state-of-the-art technology. We won an international award for some of our technology, and then there is, of course, the most recent thing that has happened, where we had our maintenance matters, which were assessed by a totally independent organization, which has found that we are one of the top five in the world. We should not choose them because they are competitive. Because that should not be the appropriate comparison for us to use. We do mention. We do belong to international organizations where our colleagues, we as SANRA, we establish international benchmarks. And that's what we do as well. Hopefully we are Refugee Service Providers and of course promoting the user-based principle, and we'll talk about that as we go along. Our core values, I don't believe, are different to any one of the others. But the one that I always want to emphasize is the one on integrity and care. Those are the two, integrity and care. But always hopefully do our work with the greatest and utmost of integrity without anybody questioning our integrity in the many interviews. Moving on now, let's just give you some background in terms of SANRA. As I said, we were established in 1998. We're about 16 years old now. So we're in our teens. We've come out of that. We're in our teens. And hopefully, as teens mature, you understand the behavior of the teens will also mature as they become older. You know, we get more experience over there as we move on. The National Development Plan. Then the National Development Plan has now become policy of government. And if I may dare say so, it has not only become policy of our government, of the Republic of South Africa, but it has been accepted by over, from the statistics that I've seen, by over 93% of the people who participated and voted in the last election. 93%. That's a very, very, it's even higher than the 85% of the non-voters, perhaps. Okay. There are differences of opinion amongst in some quarters, but not on the whole of the NDP. The differences are on some parts of the NDP. We have. And that's fine, we will have that. But we have a policy now which gives us what our objectives are going forward by 2030 in terms of what we want to do. Now, what you will see in blue is the contribution that SANRA makes in terms of meeting the objectives of the National Development Plan. When we're talking about eliminating income poverty, what we do in the community development programs, our SMME development program. We have over 800 SMMEs working on the road network of South Africa. And this is audited, by the way. If anybody wants their contact details and the names and the I'm quite happy to send it to you. You can go see for yourself whether they do exist or not. These are not ghost companies. These are not trunk companies. 800 black SMEs working on the road network for us in South Africa. Reducing inequality, we've been developing human capital, and you'll see some of the things that we do as far as that is concerned. We're talking about increasing employment, establishing a competitive base for infrastructure. If you look at it in terms of what the other objectives of the NDP are, very simple. Talks about, and that's in slide 13, public infrastructure investment at 10% of GDP. So about 30% of GDP in 2030. Finance, tariffs, PPPs, taxes, loans, and focus on transport, energy, and water. And that's what the National Development Plan is saying. And that is the mission that you saw of us earlier on in the slide where we talk about promoting the user-based principle. That's not the something that SANRA has done for. The user-based principle is already established way back in the 80s. In 1996, the White Paper on Transport makes it also very clear, the 1996 White Paper, regarding the user-based principle. And now, of course, a few years later, we have the National Development Plan saying the same thing. We've not moved away. But let me also assure the House, we use that instrument very selectively and very carefully. And that's why you will find that only 15% of our road network is toll road network. That's 3,000 kilometers out of the 21,000 kilometers of roads that we look after. 3,000 kilometers. And if you look at it in terms of the entire road network of 618,000 kilometers of roads, you look at the wild coast, that comes from one of our most poverty stricken areas, part of the Eastern Cape, the Pondoland area. I don't know how many people already recognize that when there are retrenchments in the mining sector, most of the people in the mining sector come from that particular area. Please, if you do get the opportunity, talk to some of the retailers over there right now. And I'll tell you with the mining strike, which is now passed, as to how it is affecting the businesses over there and how it is affecting. They have no alternative. And the reason that there's no alternative is because there isn't a good road network to provide them with an alternative. And yet, we have people who live in places like Stellenbosch and Randburg and that, who are not directly affected by that poverty over there, have decided to take us to court. But then, I mean, Sandra has been fighting a number of battles in the court. And honorable members, let me make that appeal to all of you. Unless I make it with myself and not my son, we must learn to respect the judgments which come up with the judiciary. Please, let's not try and keep on questioning the judiciary's judgments. Once the judgment is made, let us please accept it and move on with our lives. Then we have the medium-term strategic framework for government. There are 14 different points over there. As far as the medium-term strategic framework is concerned, and you can see again in terms of the contribution that Sandra makes. That is shown both in red and in blue as to the contribution that Sandra made. So we work within the embers, the frameworks which have been established by government. We do not work outside the frameworks of government itself. As I said earlier on, we actually implement government policy, we don't make policy. Of course, we get involved in the establishment of the standards and norms for our own sector. That is the expertise that we bring to the sector. We do not make government policy in terms of how we fund our road network, how we meet the diverse challenges that we face in our country in terms of making sure that there's sufficient funds to do what we need to do. We have a vibrant society that we're always looking forward to and then working towards. The Department of Transport has six outcomes. I know over the last yesterday and today, our colleagues are meeting in the Department of Transport. We'll be revisiting as to what is expected from the DOT. And these may have, like all good things in government, we always increase this in the very decrease of people expect, because we will see what it is. But again, we will make sure that we play our rightful role in meeting the outcomes. So these are the outcomes which have been undertaken and signed off by our minister. She, as we all know, our minister has a contract with the president, and it is our job to make sure that contract of hers is fulfilled as we go forward. These are the strategic outcomes, the oriented goals, what are the impacts, as far as Sandra is concerned, when we talk about providing effective strategic road infrastructure. I don't think I need to repeat, but let me do repeat once more, and hopefully I won't repeat it again. In terms of impression upon the Honourable House over here, the members here, the significance of the National Road Network, and we say again that about 75% of the long distance freight moves on the National Road Network. That's the big significance about it. We talk about the effective strategic road infrastructure, where we facilitate the development of commerce, international trade, and more importantly, we don't only facilitate the movement of freight, but the mobility of freight, but also of people. When we talk about people, we're talking about the roads that are used by whether it's buses or taxis or any other form of public transport. But public transport also requires good roads for people mobility, of course we have facilitated access in terms of community development, tourism, job creation. As long as we keep on implementing our projects, as long as we award the projects through the public tender system that we have, we will ensure that the jobs are created. Now, whatever people may say, we know that what the construction sector has done is totally unacceptable. We accept it. We know that. That it's unacceptable what they've done. But we need to also recognize that the construction sector does create the jobs where we need them most. And I'm talking about in the areas of the semi-skilled and the unskilled labor. That's why our need is greatest in terms of creating jobs in our country. And the construction sector does play a significant role. Now let me make sure that people understand. I'm not condoning for one moment what's happening in the construction sector. And we are taking the appropriate action on that. Before I read again in tomorrow's press, Standard will doing nothing about it. That's not the case. We are taking the appropriate action. And we will continue doing that. Because people have been wronged. It's not that Sandra has been wronged. The poor has been wronged. That is what happened over there. The poor has been wronged. And we cannot tolerate the poor being wronged by somebody else over there. So, having said that, we still need this construction sector. But hopefully we will persuade them that they will do business in a more transparent and honest manner. That they will not be opportunistic. We will leave the opportunism to some other profession. But we will not tolerate that in the construction sector. As far as transformation and empowerment is concerned, some of the members of the House, I noticed some older members around here today, this morning, who will recall that when we did the Maputo Development Corridor, Sandra was the first one to start talking about black and white. Look at those tender documents. In those days, the phrase black economic empowerment, broad-based black economic empowerment, wasn't even coined. That's more than 13 years ago. We call it social and entrepreneurial development. The Sandra has always been committed to changing the economic scenario in South Africa through its procurement processes. And we will continue to do that. And our annual report will actually show you the numbers that we've managed to achieve. Skill development and training, education support. And I spoke earlier on about our SMEs, 800 SMEs that are working on the Sandra job. By the way, they do get support from what we call our management contractor, in terms of the training and the mentorship that they require to be able to grow the enterprises. It's not something where they're left to their own and that they're not being mentored and trained in terms of becoming genuine enterprises. Here's another figure which even I didn't initially accept, but we did some checks on this. I also used to believe that, you know, that the SMEs on average employ between 4 and 5 people. It's not the case. SMEs employ about 14 people. That's the number of people there. There's 14 households which get supported through this program that we have. And there was a site which I'll show you later in terms of how we make it. Do that. Then of course we support our universities, internships, bursaries and scholarships. As well in the aggregates in the presentation which we'll share with us. Yeah. The strategic objectives, Sandra has 8 strategic objectives. The one that I want to just is two that I'd like to talk about, Chair. One is the issue around providing safe roads. We all know it, and it's totally all of us agree that we can't even our roads is unacceptable. Sandra is only responsible for providing a safely engineered road. We cannot and do not take responsibility for how you and I drive on that particular road. But you see later on in the presentation where we are actually doing some research where we're looking at how we can change the behavior off the drivers on our road, and we're doing that with about 3 universities. I also want to draw your attention to our strategic objective 6, achieve financial sustainability. As I said in the earlier listening part of the presentation, on the slide that I showed, that our mandate in terms of the Sunbelt Act is very, very clear that we are responsible for funding of our road network as well. That we are not just leaving to allocations from national treasury. This, by the way, is supported by an annual performance plan with key performance areas which are linked to the individual performance of each one of us in the nation. We sign off on an annual performance plan with our minister. The minister accepts it or rejects it, you know, amends it, and that is what we always undertake to deliver on an annual basis, but it's a 3-year rolling program. It's a 3-year rolling program. There are measures. And when the AG comes, an auditor, the AG doesn't only do a financial audit on Sunbelt. The AG office also does a performance audit on Sunbelt. And if, you know, there are any issues around the performance of Sunbelt other than financial issues, you will see that the AG will report and does report on it. Now, as I said earlier, we have two parts to our business, the non-toll part and the toll part. This is the budget for the non-toll part. What the actual was in terms of the treasury allocation, the first line on the top, how much like 18 on the top, and then the budget for this financial year 14-15, 15-16, 16-17. Now, of course, this is a clear increase in terms of our budget, but you will see that it doesn't actually meet exactly what we need still, and we can show that. But we accept, and we fully understand the standard, the disparate demands which have been made on that cake. We need to be able to grow that national cake of ours to be able to get a better slice of the cake, rather than, we all know, you know, when you've got a small cake, and the thinner you cut that slice of cake, you end up with mishmash. You don't end up with any kind of cake, and you end up with a lot of crumbs, and that's not where we want to go. So we will understand the constraints within which we operate, the financial constraints. But that does not mean that we will not aim and try our utmost to make sure that we have and maintain financial sustainability, preserve our financial sustainability as one of our objectives. The rest of the slide shows in terms of where we're going to spend money, and what I like to term this as asset preservation. I mentioned earlier in terms of this greater than 2 trillion rand as a replacement cost for our assets, road assets in South Africa, but we have to break it up into the different kinds of activity that takes place in terms of engineering requirements and for accounting purposes. Well, but overall, I like to believe that we don't build new roads. It's a very, very difficult a new road. We will do an alignment simply because of the large extent of the road network alone. Where we need to build a new road is that 131,000 kilometers that we talked about, which aren't put present. And that will probably be in the municipal sphere of government and not in the, either the province or national. And that's budget. Our budget, we have to maintain our roads. We don't have the luxury of turning around and saying that because of the challenges we face, that we shouldn't be maintaining the toll budget. One. Secondly, from being the House will recognize that we have to, and you see the last line over there on the slide, when we talk about finance charges, we have to keep on paying our loans. And this is one thing I've never understood. And I go and address a lot of forums, business forums, community forums, etc. you know, all kinds of people are in these forums. Somehow other people believe when government borrows money, government doesn't have to repay the loan. I don't understand where this thinking comes from. It doesn't matter who it is. At the end of the day, we still have to repay those loans. And if we don't, as government, meet our commitments to our invested community, I think I'd be talking to the converted if I have to start spelling out as to what the consequences are for not meeting our financial commitments to the invested community, both local and international. And here's another myth. You know, people believe that toll roads are funded by some wealthy benefactor. They're not. Your 5 rand and 10 rand that you and I put away in the pension fund doesn't matter which one of these pension companies it is. By the way, we're better than African Bank. Those are the people who actually come and invest in this fund. It's not some wealthy benefactor who turns around and says, we have our bonds that have been purchased by the private sector. You'll find that it is large these pension houses who invest in insurance companies who invest in the public program. It's not somebody else. So that is how we manage to do it. South Africa, by the way, is one of the few countries in the world where they do that. You talk to a lot of countries outside of South Africa, they're trying to encourage their pension houses and their pension funds to start investing in infrastructure. They talk about funding in infrastructure. South Africa has been doing it for years. But of course, like all good companies, they manage their risk and they will say that, listen, when it comes to water, we will only have this percentage. When it comes to roads, we will have this percentage. So they have a different percentage in terms of what the risk appetite is of that particular company. That is not something that we influence at Sunrise in terms of. We just go out with cap in hand, hoping that people will invest in our roads because our mandate is to find the roads in South Africa as well. And of course, the loans have to be repaid with interest. One day we will perhaps have some kind of Islamic financing that we don't have to pay interest, but until that day comes, we have to pay interest. Contract awarded for the financial year, past financial year 2013-2014, total of 175 contracts with a value of nearly 9 billion rand. If anybody is going to measure Sunrise, you should always measure it by this particular number, 9 billion rand, in terms of the contracts that we have awarded for the financial year. And this is where the jobs are created. And I spoke about the we need a construction industry, but we need an honest construction industry. Yeah, this is where it is, that you can see in terms of the work that we put up and keep the construction industry alive, but also create all the jobs. This slide over here shows you what we call the pavement age trend, and the reason that the age of the pavement is becoming older. It simply has been happened because of the incorporation of the roads that we've had from the provinces over the years. Let me illustrate this by an example in terms of how Sunrise works. By September 2013, we inherited about 3,500 kilometers of roads, 1,500 from the Northwest Province and 2,000 kilometers from the Eastern Cape. Between September 2013 and September 2012 and January 2013, we filled all the potholes on that 3,500 kilometers of roads. And that was done by our SMMEs. There was a system in place where the SMMEs are available to do that kind of work. The contractor is available for us to do that work. And we do fill in the potholes once, so we come back and do the actual rehab or the end of maintenance, the slide that you saw in the different parts. And the reason we do that is just simply to provide the safe, again as I said earlier on, the safety engineered road, we want to provide the safety engineered road. It may not be a smooth ride as yet, except that will come with time, but at least, you know, is what is the bus? Because you keep on filling the potholes when we take over the roads because they reckon they go out of business. But that's just pure rumor and speculation on my side, so please don't quote me on that one at all. But also I've been told by the 4x4 drivers, you know, owners of the 4x4 vehicles, man, we love those potholes roads, you can just shout now. That's not our business, so please, that's not our business. The next slide, honorable members, we just like to show, and please, look at it in terms of what is the price we pay if we do not do our maintenance as scheduled and when we have to do it. Now there's a green arrow pointing upwards. You see, when the road starts and it is built or rehabilitated, you'll see that we start off on a good, and if we don't maintain it, it deteriorates very sharply. If we delay the maintenance between 3 to 5 years, we'll see that sort of that orange line over there. It costs us 6 times more to bring it back into a good condition. And from the time that we're supposed to be doing this maintenance, that green arrow, the first one that you see on your left hand side, if we delay the maintenance between 5 to 8 years, it costs us 18 times more. And that is the price we pay for delayed maintenance. And that is why we have this emphasis of Sunroad, maintenance first. And then we will do the rest. And that's the reason. Because that's a loss of opportunity in terms of maintaining 18 or 6 good other roads and kilometers of roads. It doesn't matter what the units of currency is, but that is it. What research here for the other show. This is just a different way in terms of showing as to what is the price for the road user actually says. We all know that the worse the road is in terms of its surface, etc., the cost to the road user increases. And there's a lot of research being done, totally independent of Sunroad as well, with the 6 logistics. Yeah, 6 logistics study which was done on behalf of some other people, not for Sunroad, by the CSIR and the University of Stellenbosch, vouched for these numbers as well. You can see that the increase in cost of transport, which is then passed on to the consumer, is exponential. That's the direct consequences of not maintaining a road. Some of the challenges that we face, these are the things of prices that we don't control. We don't control this particular price of this commodity. Interesting, he's telling me on the chair that I'm not controlled. You can hear me. The slide that I'm showing over here now, which is slide 54, is just how the price of bitumen is fluctuated. As you know, that we don't control the price of oil. The price of oil is controlled elsewhere, and we have to pay in terms of whatever the refinery charges at the end of the day for the for bitumen. The next slide, the reason I show the next slide is just showing a comparison of the CPI, which is shown in green, the consumer price index, and the producer price index, which is shown in blue, and then, of course, the red one. Now, the red one is the construction price adjustment factor. The construction price adjustment factor, thank you. The red one is that we adjust the prices by this particular factor. The indices that we use is plant, labor, material, civil engineering material, and diesel, not bitumen. Bitumen is paid separately, but the diesel in the plant, etc., and all of that, right? So those are the 4 indices which make up the consumer price adjustment factor for us. Now we pay 85% of the CPA, 15% is the risk of the contractor. There's a formula that we've all agreed to. Now, PPA is much higher than the PPI. And then please, let me make an appeal to you, Honorable Chair, for the members to perhaps try and convince National Treasury to please adjust our budget by the green line. We know we won't get the red line, so we understand that, as I said earlier. But we accept the consensus in which we work in our country. But perhaps, you know, if we can get our budget adjusted by the green line, it will be extremely, extremely useful in helping us, because we see that in this one. This is our break sheet, I call it, again, let me invite when I spoke about the technology that we use. We have cameras on the truck at the bottom left-hand side, you know, on both those vehicles, where we can take photographs of cracks of about 3 millimeters. Genuinely, you can see it. So when we drive, we can survey our roads now, traveling at 80 kilometers per hour. We no longer have to do this visual inspection. We do this thing in a safe condition for this equipment as well. And I spoke about state-of-the-art technology. This is how we use technology to be able to inform us in terms of how do we actually spread that, you know, meager amount of money that we get from National Treasury and that as wide as we can to the best of our ability. And we make use of technology. Now, it's the technology that we use which informs our budgeting process. Our budgeting process is not informed by, in terms of, you know, who's making the loudest noise, because we can show scientifically. We can show scientifically as to how we arrive as to on which, what activity that we need to carry out and what we need to spend on that particular road as well. And again, I invite the members of the House to please come and see us. Maybe I should offer to pay for the transport. Put all of the guys in the bus, you know, all the honorable members in the bus, and take you around to our project to show you how this team actually works. So I think we should pay for you with the transport to do that. You're in transport. This is the slide that I was referring to earlier in terms of what we need versus what we get. Now, we have the medium-term expenditure framework basic. Now, let me try and explain this and make it as clear as possible, and I hope for all the recordings which are taking place over here, people will listen to them before they write about it. On the national road network, we don't have a backlog of maintenance. Okay? On the national road network. However, we have a backlog in terms of what the slide is showing very clearly on slide 27, the strengthening, meaning to say that because of the increase in traffic on our roads, etc., we need to strengthen our roads now to be able to carry that particular loading. Expansion requirement, meaning to say because of the volumes that have been increasing of traffic, and we can show you the numbers of the volumes of traffic that have been increasing, we need to expand our roads. And I'm not talking about the 132,000 kilometers. I'm talking about the national road network. When we're talking about extensions, Honorable Chair, we're talking about additional lengths, etc. What we call climbing lengths or passing lengths. That is what we need. And this is what you can see in terms of what we need in each year and what our allocation has been. And that's the short term. So, the choice is that if we do not expand our road network, etc., we are going to end up with congestion. So that's the price we're going to pay. But I'm hoping that in our urban areas, that our public transport will be able to assist. And that's where, again, where we use technology. Now, this one you don't have to come and see in Gauteng. We share a facility with the city and the Western Province of the year, up here in Faro. You must go and visit the centre and see what we've got there. What we do is we're talking about travel demand management. The travel demand management that we do today are using intelligent transport systems, and research has shown again that we do increase the capacity of our roads are about between 20 to 25% without having to build new lanes by managing our our transport better, our fabric is better on our roads. And again, if we say the last thing. Now, having said that, let me also remind the honorable members about the challenges that we face on the entire road network of South Africa. In 2010, the then Minister of Transport, Minister Jeff Kadebe, tasked Sunrail with doing an estimate of what the backlog is on the maintenance of the other roads. That's why I drew the distinction. 150 billion rands. That's purely maintenance. I'm not talking about strengthening, I'm not talking about extension. 150 billion rand is what we require. Last week, there was a statement made by the Honorable MEC from KZN where he said that he needs 9 billion a year, but he only gets 3 billion to try and catch up on the back. And that's part of the 150 billion rand back. And that is the challenge we face. Now, that backlog of 150 billion. Respected honourable members, does not include the 131,000 kilometres of unproclaimed roads. Does not include that. So we should really truly ask us, how do we fund this backlog? Let's, for the moment, accept that we're going to live in congestion and the added pollution. For the moment, hypothetically speaking. How are we going to fund our backlog of the 150 billion rands that we've got currently, and then still build the roads for the 132,000 kilometers. The next few slides hopefully will make it clear in terms of the assistance that one can provide through government policy, accepted government policy, in terms of the National Development Plan, Moving South Africa is another document that I didn't mention. One of our honourable members here will remember Moving South Africa, that we worked together. Mm-hmm. And of course the white paper of 1996. Here's a scenario. We take the 16, and I need to update this now that we've got 21,000 kilometres of road, by the way. Yeah. If we take the non-toll road and let's assume, we can do any scenario that we like. This is a particular scenario that we just played with. But if we get a constant 10 billion rands from the fiscus to fund the non-toll roads, and that we don't have any new toll roads, you can see what the condition of the road is. Now, again, let me put the emphasis on the assume. If I know, I've got my little green apples, I'm going to read tomorrow to say he's going to toll all these particular future roads. That's not what I'm suggesting over there. The choice will be made by my minister after having followed the proper legislative process in terms of it. But it's our responsibility to point out scenarios. That's our job. That's part of our expertise. If we take 2,000 kilometers of roads, for instance, just 2,000 kilometers of roads sometime in the future, and we fund them through the user charge, through the user pay principle. If we fund them through that, this is automatically the future changes. Just for 2,000 kilometers. So if we take the current 3,128 kilometers, we increase it to 2,000, 5,000 kilometers. But the 5,000 kilometers out of 21,000 and growing, or the 618,000 kilometers of roads, no matter which way you look at it, this is a tool, an instrument, that I believe that we will have to continue using if we are going to meet the challenges that I mentioned about the 150 billion rand backlog we've got and having to service the unserviced, the people that don't have the service at all as far as roads are concerned. These are the stark realities of what we face as funding is concerned. I'll leave that thought to the honourable members. If you have the slide and if anybody wants to further interrogate this with us, we feel free to do so. And we can change the numbers. We can change the numbers to suit you, to send them out and say that, all right, we'll only have another 1,000 kilometres, please tell us what it will be. Yeah? And I'm assuming half of those we will have decided this group for 2014-15, which is on top of our list, is asset management systems for the time and maintenance of running. So we will do that. I just want to do this and emphasize the third bullet point there, Honorable Chair, the good cooperative relationship. Notwithstanding the fact that some cities and provinces do take us to court, and that's their constitutional right. We don't have a problem with them doing that. They can do that, but again, as I said early on, once the judge has ruled on this case, let's accept the judgment. There is a move in terms of saying that Sandrail needs to take more and more roads in terms of under their jurisdiction. We have a slightly different view on the issue. Sandrail should be able to mentor and train our colleagues in the provinces and in the metro, rather than turning around and saying, no, just let Sandrail. We want them to be honest. I can tell you now. I feel very comfortable right now. I can look at my colleagues and I know their names and I know who you are and everything else. You end up in this huge this thing, conglomerate over here, but you don't even know who's for who you're doing any longer. That's not true. And that's our offer that we make continuously, and we will continue making that offer to say that. To that effect, Honourable Chair, we've actually established an academy now to train our young new graduate engineers. We just started that. We've done it. Fine. We have to grow our own self. But we've got a view, and we have offered it to our provinces and the metros as well, to say that they're welcome to send the new graduates to the academy to be able to. Because our objective at the end of the day with that academy is to make sure that our new graduates get the necessary training and experience, and also to register as professional engineers. We need them to register as professional engineers. We can't, with due respect to all the other professions, you cannot run an engineering company, an engineering entity, without the requisite skills in the engineers that you require. And you know, I don't always agree with some of the things that people say, that our universities don't produce the right kind of person. I don't expect the universities to produce a person who can hit the road running and be able to design a bridge for me tomorrow or a particular road without the necessary additional training. The universities give you the foundations. That's what they give you. They don't actually produce the professional engineer that you require. And that is what we have done by doing that in our office for 10 as far as the cooperation is concerned with that. We will continue with our programs as well, the current program, and we emphasize current program, and that's how we've got the Winelands project on that list, and of course the Wildcats that I mentioned earlier. These are some of our major non-program projects. Routine road maintenance, 100% of the road network is maintained. That's by those SMMEs. And just to inform the honorable members over here, these are not annual contracts. The SMMEs get the contract for 3 years and they perform, we monitor their performance regularly. That should, mean in the last sort of 15 years, 13 years, I can't recall having got asked an SMME to leave their job because they haven't performed well. Because if that is the case, that means the training is not being done properly. We haven't done that, and if they do well within the 3 years, we will extend the contract by another 2 years. So we're actually developing real entrepreneurs. Enterprises are being created over here. And not just, you know, giving somebody a job. That is the additional benefit of having this particular program. And this is just a selection of the list of projects. There's a much more comprehensive list that we send to the department to actually see what we're doing. What we need to do in terms of some of the larger capital investments that are required for these particular roads over here, they'd be at risk of lively investments that are required. Please vote. Don't say tomorrow that you said this is a toll road. Okay, if I showed this particular slide once before, the names that I was reading all over the show, oh, these are the toll roads. The word toll road doesn't appear in there at all. All I'm doing is the attention of the honorable members of the year is that these are projects which require a larger amount of capital investment. Our current concession contracts in the last 3 years, you'll see that the concessionaires have spent 7.5 billion rand, so that's 7.5 billion rand, which did not have to be found by government, and the roads are maintained. I've mentioned already these two projects in terms of our other risks that I had, the maintenance that we do in terms of routine road maintenance, and the periodic maintenance that we see, that the frequency with which we have to do periodic maintenance. That's not the length of the contract or anything, but that's the frequency that in which we have to do, and this is the type of stuff that we do. As far as transformation is concerned, our overall empowerment rating is in a level 2, but we are required to go back and redo that. We are busy redoing that, and I think the results have to be out by September. But perhaps the Honourable Chair, we have to rethink before the codes have been revised, etc., whether we should do it for September, or just wait for those codes and are revised by DPI and then do it once. But that will sort out internally with our colleagues in the department and be guided by our minister on that. We have an employment equity plan that we submit regularly to the Department of Labour. It's a publicly available document. We provide bursaries to do the skill development. Now, we support a particular school here in Maths and Science, the COSET school, here in Kalisha. Now, I'm sure that one I don't have to hire a bus, the car that I have, you can come in with me and I'll take you and show you what we do. Please, why is this a jumper? Let's see what they do there. It's an excellent thing. We're not the only, by the way, people who support the school, there are other people as well. But we've been supporting the school now for 10 years or something. And you must see the children who come out of there. These are kids who come out of Kailasia who live over there under appalling conditions. But you must see those children, how they perform. Why? Because they aren't given the necessary assistance and encouragement. Now, in all the years we've had, I've not had any one of them yet do civil engineering, but we don't mind. Because we're growing the timber for South Africa Incorporated. It's not for SANRA. They've gone into the other sciences. The popular ones seem to be the two professions that seem to be popular is ICT. You can understand what the IT version and accounting. And good for them. I wish them all the best. So we will continue supporting programs like that. But I'm mentioning that one because this one is here on your doorstep. You can visit. We do this throughout the country. Of course, we provide bursaries as well. That's for the guys to go to university, the internship that we run. And then we support three chairs, three different chairs at three different universities. The one chair that we've been supporting for the longest is the chair in pavement engineering. That is the hard engineering that we need to do. And that is directly related to our work. We need to make sure that this is the talent coming out. And one of the reasons that we support this chair, and you'll see this, and we can show you the numbers, that on the chair in pavement engineering, we've trained more graduates, master's graduates, on this continent than any other university has through our program, the chair that we sponsor at Stellenbosch. We want people to walk around the world, and when they say that whether it is any one of our universities, it doesn't matter which one. We want them to understand that they're coming from internationally recognized universities. Why should only some universities outside of South Africa have that status and not our universities? And the only way our universities will develop is if people like Sandwell and everybody else supports our universities to do that, to stay at the cutting edge. And by the way, in payment engineering, we are at the cutting edge. Next year, we will be presenting what we've done with the research work that we've done at the Transportation Research Board in the USA, in Washington. We have an invitation for the TRV, one of these bodies, these days of other research around the stuff which comes up. We have now a privilege of getting an invitation to come and present at an international forum next year, January, for the work and by the way, this is all homegrown work. There's no outside. This is done by local people within Sangra, people with our universities, people in the private sector, and of course the CSIR. That is where we stand. The other thing that we sponsor is the one here at UCT. Now that one is in transportation. Those guys are looking at mainly like what we call policy work, modeling work, the development of urbanization, the impact of land use on transport. They are not doing hard engineering. And they will look at people walking on the streets on the one end, to people flying up in the sky and everything else in between. That is the embed, the brief of that particular chair at UCT. Now the third chair, which probably excites me most in this, is that we're sponsoring, this is the one that we've just done this year, and our minister will be launching it officially next month. He's the chair in mathematics and science at the University of the Peace. People will probably wonder now, what's math and science got to do with engineering? That's the foundation of which engineers are both. We've got SCAR now, you know, this square kilometer array. How are we going to man that? That facility. If we don't grow the skills and the talents in our own country, and we're hoping, not only will there be teachers coming out of this particular program, but the graduates will be able to enroll in facilities like that. And we'd like to believe that the summit is making a tiny, weeny, weeny bit of a contribution to the human capital of South Africa incorporated. And that's what we do. We have an outreach program with our communities as well, for the various things that we do. And this is just showing you a slide of the work we do. The lit targeting program, you'll see somewhere here that you'll see that the children who come onto that program are all from the rural areas. We just support the program together with which does all the hard work. Well, our universities, let me correct myself there very quickly, the universities and the schools and the teachers and principals and the schools that we support, but the parents do all the hard work and we occasionally take the credit for that. The other work that we do in terms of the University of the Free State, you can see some of the numbers that we've got there with the Nelson Mandela University, Metropolitan University, that we do as well, and again the Free State one as well. There's a lot of the work that we do in the rural areas with them. And one of the things that I find, Honorable Chair, is that it depends on the heart and minds of the person who's running the program. If the heart and mind is in that particular program in terms of developing the youth of South Africa, we have greater success with it. Rather than putting it into somewhere to say that I'm going to pay you a salary and go and do it. If your heart is not in it. And I find this with my own colleagues in our community development projects. We all want to work on these very large sexy projects that we have as engineers. But then when you ask them to say, man, I've got this rural road I'm doing over there, you can spend 6 months over there. I have a deal with that. You can do some of that work and you do some of this other deal work as well, otherwise, you know. But I've noticed the difference. Once you've got your heart in mind, even with our SMME training program, you find with the contractor, the management contractor that you work with, if that particular person training those people doesn't have a feel for training, you don't achieve the same successes as you do on another project. So it's not the quantum of money that you spend on this, but the quality of the person that you get to run this project. And this is what we're finding as we're going along. These are just the numbers in terms of the scholarships that we are giving for the grade 10 to 12, across where the schools are, the bursaries, at which universities, the internships. The internships are, by the way, in civil engineering. The hard work directly related to us, we place our interns with contractors and with consultant engineers. This is the SMME, I've already spoken. this is how we achieve it. It is part of the contractual obligation of the contractors to do this. We have now slightly revised this in terms of, put it further into the youth and women as well. This is the month where I must apologize to all the women in construction. We told you as well. Women have been doing the other sectors. Mm. But please believe me, we're trying very hard. Honestly, we are trying to redress that in terms of women in that. And we have now targets set for that as well, going forward. Some of our community development projects, as to what we do with pedestrian bridges, etc., the walkway where we separate the pedestrians from the traffic, where we just create, facility for people to have. And you'd be amazed as to the number of people who actually start using this facility, and they're there. They don't have the cash between a motorized traffic and the non-motorized traffic. The budget for that is just on over 1 billion rand that we want, and the projects we're doing and the jobs that we create as well. Now, this is one of these other programs in terms of the road safety. Here, I need to just dwell on this one a little bit. Our concentration on the road safety, and this is on slide 42, our concentration on road safety is on the learners at our schools and at our universities. We want to catch them young. And you can see in terms of how we're doing this, in terms of trying to educate our learners on how to use the road. Our research is showing that a lot of our children don't know how to use the road, especially those who live in our rural areas. They don't have to deal with the same amount of traffic as you and I do here in the middle of Cape Town or Johannesburg. Or the children who live in these in the urban areas, as to what happens over there, you can see as to how many schools we've just been, we've been to, the learners that we have targeted, and more importantly, we also work with the educators. Now, we've also developed a curriculum on road safety. We'll be working with the Department of Basic Education to make part of the school curriculum as well. And that's the curriculum that we have developed at Sandra as part of our guidance. We have a Facebook as well, a Czech High Coast, a Czech East Coast, please visit it. There's some interesting stuff we've got over there as far as road safety is concerned. You can see that we have about 10,000 followers already, and we're hoping that. One of the other things that we do, we run an annual competition, art competition. We invite the schools and the children from grade three, from primary school right down to high school. We have the children, and we have a competition for them, and an art competition. We try and instill a culture of safety in those. So we target them. We are not targeting the adults on this program. Now, as part of this thing, that we've got the 3 years road safety study that we're doing for the Pretoria of University at the Universities of Pretoria, KwaZulu-Natal in the Northwest. Again, in terms of what we're doing in terms of targeting our grade 6 learners and the educators in public transport. One of the reasons that we're targeting our public transport users is that we need to have passengers also taking some responsibility for telling the drivers of the public transport facility that, man, that's not the way you behave on the road. Please, we want to get safely to our destination. We may get there a bit later, but please get us there safe. These are the interim findings in the first year that we've got, some general findings that we've got about, now we have a Shosha Kaluba program, with the Department of Transport, and this is what we find, that learners do not know about cycling or appropriate passenger behavior on public transport. It's very good, and we can't just keep on continuing with our Shosha Kaluba program, which we will continue to do, but we're linking that to the education. Shoba Kaluba. We are linking it to the education program as well. It's not something that we do in isolation, but these are some of the incident findings that we've gone. And our challenge is always in making the time for our educators. This becomes part of the curriculum, because right now they do it as an aside, an extracurricular activity. We want this to become part of the curriculum, our normal school curriculum. And the educators, we need to encourage them, you know, to attend this. And currently it is a bit of a challenge, because they have other activities they have to carry out at school as well. Some of the road safety projects, I've already covered this, the next few slides, in terms of how we get our funding for the non-toll roads, the toll roads that we've already done. This slide, the honourable members must know that we do not set our borrowing limits. Our borrowing limits are set by Treasury and our minister in terms of. So every year we have a program with them. We have a medium-term note program, which is a long-term program. And what they said is, in terms of what we can borrow, our borrowing capacity is just over 48 billion rand. We can't work outside of that. But every year we have to go to National Treasury to make sure that we stay within the limit of the annual limit. So it's not something that SANRAL just gets up. Now what we've got over there, the SZ bond. By the way, all of our bonds are listed on the stock exchange, so anybody can see it, trading them, etc., and encourage you to please buy our bonds. They're good, safe bets in terms of your future pensions. So the SZ bonds are the ones which are guaranteed. And the highway bonds, we have two types. One, those are guaranteed, and those with the other, the highway bond, which is the highway bonds and the SZ bonds are guaranteed. The NRA bonds, those are not guaranteed. Those are done on our balance sheet. Now that is why we make such a big fuss about the rating, for two reasons. One, we do have bonds which are on our own balance sheet. Now some of the investor, he doesn't know SANRAL. He sits in New York. He doesn't know the clue about South Africa. But now we're trying to convince this particular investor to buy our bonds. All they want is a rating report and what that rating says. Now that guy, we all know about the financial crisis is done to all of us. Some crime, you know, this kind of terminology is entered into our system. These guys end up over there, but he goes from New York. And it is holidays in the Algarve. Remember we had that acronym, the PIGS. Portugal being one of those countries. And because he goes and has his holiday in the Algarve, man, he buys his bonds from Portugal and not from South Africa or Tanga, whether it's a sovereign bond or not, or Eskom or whatever. He doesn't know us. So we rely heavily on the rating agencies. And we rely heavily to make sure that we portray the right pictures and ambassadors of South Africa to maintain our rating. Because when the rating drops, whether that's of SANRAL or the sovereign, and this is the link I just don't understand that people don't always make, but if the sovereign rating drops, yeah, the cost of borrowing for all of us in South Africa increases. It's not just that it will only be one small portion. The cost of doing business increases. And there's a reduction in the confidence in the economy of our country, which we cannot afford under any circumstances. We need to be able to maintain the confidence in our economy and our country if we are going to meet the challenges of unemployment in our country and the inequality that we have. This is some of the advantages of the toll network. I've shown those two earlier slides as well. Yeah. The long-term investment, it's improved road user benefits and the time saving. Comcom has done quite a bit of work recently on this, and you can see that. By the way, the Cape Town is the worst one for congestion in all of South Africa. Used to be us, but you know, we've improved it to the G4, so we're better off now. But that's not our research, by the way. Hey, that's not our research. Comcom research. Okay? That is clear before somebody says something is spreading out some kind of propaganda. We're not. We're just a mere message on this one. Yeah. The favorite topic, Charles, this is a fuel levy. You know, do that. And if we think that the rich have to live off the poor, that's the attitude towards the poor the job. And that is what will happen if we don't be not the supporter of the few that for that. What we call in inverted commas free roads actually encourage urban sprawl. They encourage people not to use private transport, as public transport. Now, there's two projects in South Africa. One is a public transport project with which I have no issue at all for being heavily subsidized. South African government has guaranteed the ridership on Gautrain. Since we implemented the GIFA, the Gautrain passengers have increased. Now, I don't have the exact figure, so don't please quote me in the figure, but in the figure is around about that the Gautrain passengers have to be about 100,000 before the subsidy that we give, the guaranteed portion, goes to zero. As long as the ridership on Gautrain doesn't increase, we will continue paying that. So what do you want to do? Where do you find the money to be able to pay for that? Then of course we have Captain Speak, also a toll road. The only toll road in South Africa where the concession has been guaranteed the traffic on that road. On none of our concession roads that we guarantee the traffic, they take the commercial risk. Captain Speak is the only one. Now where does that money come from? Comes from the first class. The choice and the guidance will come from the honourable members of the MFS, not from someone. The next couple of slides is directly related to GIFA, some of the steps that we've done. This is the household quintile, 5 being the highest quintile, by the way. This is not South Africa, this is in Gauteng. In terms of what you can see, estimated average number of people per household, the bottom 20% of about 4.7, the top 20% at 2.5 persons per household. Estimated percentage of household income earned from employment, 28% at the bottom, 74% at the top 25. Estimated percentage of household income from transfers, that means that people who work in the mines, etc., and then transferring the money into our rural areas, the example I used earlier of the wild coast, 60% at the bottom. 60%. 3% at the top. Estimated average monthly income per household, this is June 23rd, at the bottom is 811 rand, 41,062 on the top. Implied average monthly income per household member, this is per member, not in the household, 171 rand at the bottom, 16,448 a month on the top. Now please bear those numbers in mind, and then you will see as to who pays for the use of the GIFA program. It's not the poor. The poor have been exempted as well in terms of the taxes. The recent travel household survey shows that 62% of the people in Gauteng, 64% of the people in Gauteng travel by taxi. They are exempt from paying toll fees. Look at that on your right hand side. The fifth one, this is in terms of freeway kilometers traveled in a month. The fifth one has traveled the most. And then of course you see the next slide, which is slide 54, the benefits in terms of value of time saved because of the higher earnings of the fifth one. You can see the difference in terms of what they benefit versus the toll fees they pay. That's if you register and get a detail, by the way. Then you qualify the 48% discount as well. These are audited numbers. These are audited numbers. This particular slide, because we were accused not so long ago of putting out information that we couldn't verify. These are audited numbers. 82.83% of the people who use the GIFA pay less than 100 rand a month. Those who reach the 450 rand cap, this is for a Class A2 for the light vehicle, is 0.63%. These are audited numbers, check. Now agencies in the business that we have. I'm quite happy to show those numbers again because I said they are audited now. They're no different from what we published previously. So this time we've got it audited. I didn't see the apology from ASA, by the way. The challenges that we face as far as this is concerned, there are a number of the challenges that we face, is the resistance basically to the user pay. And unfortunately, that I hope that today, through my presentation over here, I have convinced those of us in this particular room as to why we need to use selectively. Let me emphasize, selectively use the user pay principle. Not only for it being government policy, which has been accepted by 93% of the people who voted in the general election a couple of months ago, have accepted the NDP and achieving the NDP, but also if you are going to meet the challenges of the backlog that we got in terms of the latest, it's 150 billion rand and growing, by the way, because that was 2010 that we did that, and growing, then of course that's 132,000 kilometers, approximately 132,000 kilometers of road. Yes, we have to provide in unserviced areas. How are we going to do that? How are we going to reduce the poverty and the inequality in our country if we do not make some of these hard choices and hard decisions that we have to take? They may not be pleasant, but I'd like to see that we are in the same boat that we were rowed in the same directions. We're part of the four coordinators for support these days. And one of the things that we recognize is we say insufficient. We don't say it doesn't exist. High level planning and coordination between intermodal transport and the state central government. We need to give life to Netman. We need to give life to RFSA, the classification of our nation. These are policy documents we certainly accept. We talk about the loss of opportunity on our projects, etc. Some of the, again, I talked about the future of private sector investments and funding of our infrastructure, intergovernmental cooperation that we need to do. Hopefully the PICC will be able to do that for us. And again, I want to say thank you very much. And I hope that this has been a really comprehensive presentation. It's not a full presentation of what we actually do in Sandra, but I hope that I have been able to show the honorable members over here that 85% of our work is regarding non-toll roads, 15% of our portfolio, which takes most of our time, unfortunately, is on the toll road side of our. But more importantly, the Sunrise is not just about toll roads. We do far more than just toll roads. Our road safety programs, our community development projects that we do, the training that we provide for people and growing the human capital of South Africa. So we do all of those things, amongst some of the other things, and the challenges that we face, and understanding the financial constraints under which we in South Africa work currently. So hopefully that I have managed to give you a picture of what we do in South Africa. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much to Alex, that this committee needs to take forward. So this is actually affecting the rural community. Not informal settlements, the rural communities are affected. One of the things that I think we must totally get out of is to talk replacement costs. I think we do not have a luxury of replacement costs. But we've had 10, 15, 20, maybe even 25 years of not maintaining roads and not putting the money into it to actually maintain the roads. So we look at the cost. We're talking about 10 million rand to do a tar road per kilometre. If we maintain, you can get a good average of what, 3 million rand to maintain per kilometre. So I really think that a person needs to look at that. That is not for a heavy tar highway. You know, I want to bring you, for example, we ask the question, how are we going to do this? How are we going to fund it? I want to take you to the MCC to Maritzburg. 2 years ago, that project stopped for 4 months because they ran out of the budget. Okay, there was no funds to continue. Contractors had to pull out all of that. But the bottom line is the story that we do not put out there. It's the fact that the contractor that was doing the work was not the contractor who got the job. He was barely a subcontractor. The guy who got the job never lifted a finger and had a group of people that got paid that made 40% cutting. So I think we should also have a look and we must say, what is the cost, the real cost of a road per kilometre? On a highway, on the R74, which I think this committee knows me now about R74, that road has been under construction for the last 10, 12 years. That road is now non-existent. Businesses have been liquidated. Okay? There's no road. And so we've got to look at, for example, if the road, I'm going to say, is it going to cost 1 million rand for this type of road? Should you say that we should not look at any tenders if it goes over an amount of 1.2 million? Or, and I'm, when I'm giving figures here, I'm really talking just giving a figure and not giving facts on that. So that is really important for us to look at that. Just very interesting, on the car train, the cost of the car train and the subsidies of that. What fascinates me is 2 years ago, it was 2 years ago, you could go from the station just after the airport, what is it called, that station? Just after Rokeel. From Rokeel to Sandton for the cost of 12 rand. Okay, 2 years ago. We took it in June and it was 48 rand. And I'm saying, how is it possible for people that use it for daily travelling to go to work, commuting, that they can still continue doing that? So I think that is just something that we really have to look at as well. I believe that the fuel letting house sectors also in the budget debate need to be rethinked. Solely for road construction, we cannot have it as it is currently just in Pandora's box, and I'm going to make a joke out of it too, so that we can give 36 million rand, for example, to the privately owned property. Okay? This should really go back into road infrastructure, and if we have to have a 1 cent or 2 cent increase in that fuel letting, let's do it, but let's maintain our roads. The economy of our country is at risk here. I'm going to be short and sweet now, sorry, Chief. We have to also say that bringing the community development plan to separate motorised and non-motorised vehicles is really brilliant. But I also should we also be giving some consideration of promoting the use of motorcycles. Instead of a person riding or driving their SUV 4x4 with one occupant on a road, should we not also promote using a motorcycle that is a lot lighter and the wear and tear and the maintenance on the road will not be, and we have, if we look at Cape Town for example, and I'm just using Cape Town as an example, if you're coming down the N1 in the right lane, you will see you've got that, it's not a yellow line, but if you make that a motorcycle lane, how effective could that not also be? I think I'm going to leave it at that for now. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable. No, please. I'm noticing that everything like that, but like, what's our request to accept it and procedure, like, if we are joined by a new member, what you know, like, who's that member? Because, as per the guidelines, so I didn't want this member from the situation. It is okay to participate, you know the procedure, but it helps him.
Thank you. Apologies, honorable member. Honorable member, Kate has come from the from court. I apologize for taking her up because for sure you just need to catch me.
Okay.
Yeah.
And welcome to the party. Just to start off with, Samuel and Sandy Abbey, who always does a great presentation and demonstrates how efficient they are as an entity. Let me just say that I said this all along, that if governments in this country are formed by standoffs that are the best governments in the world. They're very efficient, they do they fulfill their mandate beyond what they should. And in fact, even colleagues like Robin Carlyle, who's not no longer in office, said the same thing. So congratulations to them. That doesn't mean that a lot of things don't agree with it. So there are a few questions that I want to just before I continue, Chair. The norm in this committee, and it's been when I was previously in the previous committee in the last parliament, is that these presentations were given to us in advance. I'm a little concerned that we didn't get this in advance, and I feel we're underprepared. I've prepared it anyway, and it would be nice to have just got this in advance, to have read it, and for you to be a little more prepared. So if we ask them, there was probably a slip up there, so I know that's how it works. We can get the presentation in the future. Then I'm going to go very quickly because I'm worried about time, and other colleagues are going to ask questions. And that is, Mr. Ali spoke about, on page 16, strategic outcomes, and that's quite a so forth. He mentioned construction companies, and I'm very concerned about this collusion. He said, yes, we are doing something about it. Construction companies and collusion and how basically they're not possible. So I'd like to know what is this action. I'll ask a similar question in the official process to the minister, and there doesn't seem to be a real answer. So I'd like to know what actually is being done. Because I get a sense that these companies are almost protected. Then the next question is. I found a very interesting page 43 and 44 spoke about this research that Stenwell undertook. If that's just kind of really possible to get a full report, I mean, if you're reading, as you may know, road safety and our bad record is a passion of mine. But I'd love to see what's come out of that and how Stenwell is using it, perhaps even the ministry and other entities in general, if you could tell us how, if that information can be imparted, in other words, not just staying in Stenwell, so I'm sure it's been used. But it's going a lot quicker. And then the last point is on page 51, where he talks about the fuel levy and so forth. And throughout the whole presentation, it sounds to me like he was fighting for a case that Samuel is being financed with fuel levy. And suddenly here it says this is not the case. Interestingly, he says that it's not ring fenced and got the general fund. Well, that's really easy. You just change the legislation. It's an old administration for the apartheid case, you may remember. Secondly, he said, everyone pays regardless of who's including the poor. What if it's too curious? if you're poor, you shouldn't have a car. So, you know, so that, you know, I'd be interested to hear about that, because I've been investigated that. But the other point is that the reason why there's been a major opposition to tolling, and there will be opposition in other provinces, I can predict that, is that there was no public participation. And Kenoff keeps on saying, well, I'm sorry, that's half a dozen school hall meetings, and the protest fire stamp address on Christmas Day and all that kind of thing, doesn't count as public participation. And I'm sure Mr. Ali will know that in all the countries where this project has been implemented, and where there's been shockingly bad public participation, it's come out exactly the same way as where we are now. The public doesn't want this contact in their mind. But in places where there's been proper consultation, public participation, like Singapore and so forth, it works because the community and public is involved in. So I would like to know, surely there should be an opportunity when they're trying to roll up and there's some case taken in and so forth, be an opportunity to change the stance and actually create a different type of public participation and not repeat what this what happened in Cartier.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. Excuse my lateness. Chairperson, let me first welcome the presentation by our agency, Sandra. I have a question which is not related to the presentation, but it has to do with the strategic objectives that are set in this document. The one about safeguard Sanral's reputation. What comes to my mind is the issue of the eviction of Luandla people. I wanted to ask Sanral about the timing of the eviction, about the relations, their relations with the city of Cape Town, and also their plan B about the land, because I heard that the land belongs to Sandra. So I want to know what the next step will be. Thank you to both the ministers, the one for housing and the one for transport, for jumping into the rescue of the people of Luandla. I also had another question about the social responsibility program that you play as Sandra. I've got the information here in front of me, but I wanted to have the information which tells us what you do in each province, in which university, what is there for our designated groups, and also by gender. I'm glad that the presenter did mention that they are planning something for women. It is August now, and we'll be interested what is there for women. Not that I'm a woman myself, but for women in general. I also wanted to assure you, Sandra, that we do support the user pay principle, and we will also vouch for you with regard to the budget increase, because you said something about it, and you also mentioned as one of your lost opportunity, the wild coast what in the Eastern Cape. I wanted to have more information about that. What do you mean by the lost opportunity? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks for the presentation. go through the slide here, please. It's unfortunately some of the things are not numbered. So please, next time number them so that we can professionally do so. So some of the questions my colleagues have asked about otherwise eviction. Versus a core value of care, like that contribution there, but you will clear us why not. So my question and my concern is about the 132 kilometers of the roads, which is like it's no man's land. There's no ownership about that, and it's mostly in deep rural area. What are you doing as the chief custodian of our roads in the country? Professor V, you said you are working cooperative with the provinces, municipalities. What are you doing about these roads? Who doesn't have ownership? Because these roads are being used and they need to be maintained and to be looked after. This will go with the your relationship with the road agencies in the provinces and then in the local government. You talk about the bus subsidy cutting every proposal, that is a stone in our flesh, because bus subsidy was introduced to help the poor subsidized in order for them to afford a mode of transport from point A to point B. I think that proposal it can be for an assistance after our stage. And the other thing is about the 800 SMEs. Are those SMEs rotating, or is only those in general 800 who are working in the whole country, but are you giving the opportunities to the new SME an opportunity to enter the that world of engineering? It's only those 800 you mentioned. The Ministry of Transport has confirmed that 40% of our roads are considered good roads. 60% is very bad roads. So what are you doing about that? The Department of Transport on page 15 on your slide clearly confirmed that they want a rural access. I mean the connection about the rural access. And this rural access, as said the department, some of the hindrances which is hindering this access is those 132 roads which are not having the ownership. And at page 16, about your own outcome, you never said anything about the rural access connectivity. While the department has mentioned it clear, which we appreciate the department can see and feel for the people in our rural area. But hence the central is like they only focus on the urban area. So you mentioned about the university in terms of the educational support, but we've noticed that the universities mentioned here, and you said we are taking maybe children from the rural area. I don't see any consistency, because we have universities in the rural area, but there are nowhere to be teachers. Why don't you introduce some programs in the rural universities also? University of Forte is in the rural area, University of Venda, University of Northwest, University of Limpopo. University of Free State, University of Cape Town, Red University. Those are well established universities. Okay. So, and another thing we wanted to know about what influenced the the tariff increment of the toll road. And another common sense question which I can ask is about our road infrastructure. What is happening to our new road infrastructure in the new disposition? While the roads which were made long before are still intact, no potholes, nothing. But our nowadays roads, after everything done, money paid, we'll find in 2 years that road is nowhere to be found. It is as better as it was a gravel road. And can you explain for us what is the purpose? Because the purpose of the national chief, vehicle national chief, is to maintain the road. Why that money is not being used to do as much to maintain our roads? Because the intention of the owners of the vehicle to pay the license is for their roads to be maintained, not for their vehicles to be driving a safety area. This other question I want to know about the Rakwena National Toll Road and the Sandra Toll Road. What the difference? Maybe you can tell me so that I can understand. Is this a subsidiary company under Toll Road, or are they on their own? Are the competitors to Sunrun? Then we wanted to be clear about that. You mentioned about 72 hours replacement of potholes. Please try to have a better communication with the provincial roads and the municipal management who are managing the roads, because some of our roads there, they have permanent potholes, not 72 hours, 2 years, 1 year, a month potholes. So please try to monitor and advise them in your forum that they must adopt this 72 hours replacement of potholes as a national strategy. And the challenge is about fencing. As you said you have the challenge about the fencing. Yes, we see in most of rural communities, when you put fence, in 2 days, 3 days, that fence has been stolen or out. Why don't you change the strategy, maybe be a wall brick like the Amastral one and the N1 road? That wall will sustain maybe for more than 10 years. But for putting the fence, and tomorrow they take the fence again, The objective is not nice, because I understand most the objective is to try to avoid the wild animals or domestic animals come to the road. The issue of the skill development, scholarship, bursary, and the internship. I think when our chairperson gives us a chance to come and make a site visit, we will be able to see in detail. Is it this geographically spread, or is it central to urban or rural areas? We are a little bit concerned whether is it spread the whole country, this opportunity of scholarship. And the challenges you said about the N1, N21 land and N2 wide coast roads. You said there are challenges about like the legal challenges. Okay. Maybe you can briefly explain, do you have a case, or do they have a case, even if the case is in court, what is the main objective of defending or trying to block you to go on with this nice project of making our roads to be very, very safe? The e-tolling, you said e-tolling resistance is also a challenge, but I think that challenge is being solved now, because the Gauteng provincial government has established a commission, and we're still waiting for the result of that commission. I don't think we can take it as a challenge, because the Gauteng province are interfering on that matter. You said there is a delay of some projects because of water affairs. then what assistance do you want from this committee or to the chairperson or to the minister? Because the Ministry of Water Affairs is around in South Africa, and we can't allow them to try to disturb you to do direct job. And you said the issue of the law enforcement is also a challenge in terms of the e-toll and open road tolling. I don't think it's a challenge because the minister, she intervened here when the DPP, if you could remember, wanted to start to educate to those non-compliant. Then it's under investigation. It can't be a challenge to you because the minister noticed that there is something which is not going on. The road safety, we are also concerned about the road safety. Can you have a data or statistics about the road or the death caused by the road and its surroundings? You know the causes of accidents, but the road and its surroundings is also one of the causes of the accident. So can we get a statistic of the accident caused by potholes, by the wild animals getting to the road? That will help us also for you to do introspective to make sure that we must improve on our side to promote respect. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, let me also welcome the presentation by Tanza. Some of the questions have been asked already, but I want to say, for example, in the issue of Rwanda, if we can also get a status quo now, what is the situation at present? Is it already solved? And secondly, you mentioned something about 48% discount. I didn't understand it very well. Can you explain it more further so that it is more clearer to us? And the issue of the unproclaimed roads, the issue of the unproclaimed roads, definitely these roads are found in one municipality or the other. They cannot just be somewhere where they cannot be identified. And fortunately, we have already identified them, that they are there, there are so many of them. And let's have a way of proclaiming them. What do we need to ensure that they are being proclaimed? What assistance do we need? So we must all make sure that this road, we don't have any road which is unproclaimed, because otherwise that road will never be taken care of. So let's have a strategy of making sure that all of them are being proclaimed. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think my first comment is to commend Sandra for the giving progress, especially on the rare skills and the medical skills, which we need to really improve the infrastructure in our country. But also to say, Honorable Mlaus, I know the rural system of funding but I think, as we also said, we need to increase intake from the rural area to be able to grow commendable. Secondly, I want to also make a follow-up on what Honorable Defenders have said, that in terms of the big five that colluded in five, I think one of our main objectives is to root out collusion and corruption. So we also, as a committee, would like to recommend to you that you must continue with the civil claims to claim what is due to us, because there is a shortage in terms of providing services, and we can't rob people of South Africa by collusion on prices. So we need that money to service the roads, as we said at the moment. The third question, or the third comment, if we don't fund our road infrastructure by 20, what other funding mechanisms are there except the funding? Because sometimes you can put all the blame on you while we don't even provide solutions to what we have to do. That. So if we can solve and can use the funding, what other funding mechanisms can we use? And the last one, I think there is a need to improve relationships with the provinces and the municipalities in order to assist them where they see access to, so that we don't have a beautiful road in the urban area and bad roads in the urban area. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jay. I have three issues that I would like to raise. The first one is on clarity, and then just a mark and a suggestion, and then one concern. The first one I'm seeking clarity is on your page 55 of the presentation, where the numbers of the GSIP user cell cost differs from the presentation handout that we got. I see your frown, Mr. Ali. But if we could then get an updated version, it would help. The second one is about the whole backlog that we seem to struggle with. And in my dealings with SALDA, I've recommended and driven the issue many times that I think it's due time that, especially on local government level, we need to start looking at and driving issues from everywhere we can, so that we actually ring-fence a particular portion of each capital budget towards refurbishment and renewal. It can't just be one authority's responsibility to maintain, but I think it's due time that we start looking at local government also taking responsibility to ring-fence a portion of annual capital budget. The third one is the concern about a specific road that I believe Mr. Ali is your department's or your company's responsibility, the road between Kapazambi and Rustenburg, where, and help you if it's not your responsibility, but I am that it's the single main road, and we have nearly daily deaths on that portion of road. Whether we can't look at decreasing speed and looking at the actual state of the road, because I also understand that there's a lot of potholes, etc. on that road. So just a concern about that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable Sibanye, thank you very much for
the
question.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank
you. No matter the picture which is created by Sandra or Sandra outside there, it's a true picture. Unlike what we hear. But now we can understand it better. Right, my first question, Chairperson, we could be on page or slide 9. Slide 9, in your small graph, I'll make it to check against slide 50, 9 and 50. You see, Chairperson, there's something which is worrying me, maybe I'm very quiet. With this slide, yes. 9 and 8 as the priority. I was looking at this beside the map, the small thing which is over at the map, the small one, which is talk about primary and strategic. I repeat, primary and strategic. You go to instead of strategic, to me, is very far too easy or primary. And then, you go to zero. And then you came again to the combo, which is very easy. What means? What the opposite is. With your strategy is zero, with your primary is zero. And then, you go to Northern Cape, whereby there are lots of challenges, Northern Cape in terms of development, you can check your strategy in field. But when you check for your primary, for your priorities for 2014, you can see some of the roles which you talk about, it, including the non-toll, the key priorities and the non-toll, the first effect. May you please elaborate to us, what do you mean exactly by this non-strategic area? And then you go to, you see, what I will ask, on what was raised by my colleagues. You open. I'm from the rural area. You see, no matter some people, they are talking in terms of the only behalf of the rural area. That's why they are not coming there. I'm coming from there. What I'll propose, some of your key, I mean, one of the recommendations, some of your key priorities, it must target to develop the areas which were most disadvantaged in the past.
Yes.
Because myself, I can bring an argument. Here in Northern Cape, what are you developing?
Yes.
It's most developed, and make it most developed. Because your priorities, most of the time, they are affecting the, what we call it, the big city. Only give us something which we also going to take back the rural development. And then you go to I'll come with the promotion of the user principles. You must remind me when I'm progressing. But I'll come to this one on page 16. Go to page 16. Or give me chapter 10, I'm reading slowly today. Yeah. On page 16, there is a thing which we have raised in terms of your comment, which is very powerful, about this construct type of construction, which are repeating the floor. I'm just doing an introspection, asking myself that, where are these people are dodging tax? Is it not the contributing fact of being corrupt because they wanted to get benefits or profits that on? Because it was exposed that some big companies are dodging tax while they reap from some of these projects. And then, I can't read it. I couldn't find it exactly how to do this. And go to page 9, slide 19. And my recommendation is to become those people who are doing that. This is their recommendation. Help us. You know why people are challenging you, Sandra? That other people, let's say there is a bid for something, they fail to win a bid. And then after failing the challenge, I'll put an example. I won't mention name because this is not a relevant platform there. Somebody raised anything about something that this is corrupt. And then some politician will realize, you know, they just got that person on a beginning. When the commission was set, the source of the information, because he failed to win it disappeared. But what about the staff from the county? So you must expose them. The weakness we are not talking about there. We are quiet. And then we don't take any issue. And also, we must help us to have a law about the people who are corrupt. And then his company maybe collapse. Then change the name. Same thing. The snake is a snake. Can change the skin, but it is the same. Change the name of the company, start another company, and come and beat again. So what do we expect? Please help us to expose these people. Don't try to come closer to them, because these people are causing trouble for us. And then also, help us, on page 20,
on slide 20. On slide 20, there is something we should talk about the contract awarded 2013-2014. You see, I would be very much happy to maybe for you to help us, because yes, somewhere you are refining, you are refining how Sunrise is accumulating funds and these user paying things and the like. But if there are contracts which have been awarded, who are we to this contract? Because some people are very funny. I can win a contract if possible in reality. And if I go the next year, if he wanted to take everything every year, if another year is failing to win that contract, then it's starting to have a problem. Which problem, if there are contracts, which contract is awarded? Because you indicated that the commitment of 9 billion, something like that, in your comment. Can you please elaborate to us so that we know exactly what you think? On slide 36, skills development. You know, may you please help us with that one? No matter, I don't know how easy it is. We only remember the friend who sure and was trying to do 1-2-3 or whatever, but I'm still not yet satisfied yet. You see, I remember somehow we had a study in Virginia in Japan, whereby agencies like yourself, they are able to assist in terms of initiating. If there's not such a thing in a university, why don't you take a lead to initiate so that you help us? So that you help us, you know? Because even as I said, you see, another thing which is worrying me, the criteria which is used, you see, to me, I think perhaps there is sometimes when you discuss some of these things like selling motion, like, there's nothing wrong with selling motion. Balance it. We only remember next to me was talking about the Northwest and the Pope. What about Mpumalanga, where there is no university? There is no proposed one. So where do you take the kids to? I think in terms of the criteria and the approach, how do you get some students to our ranks? This must also pay again. And then there's one which is number 51, slide 51, when you spoke about it, you feel nervous. Oh, really? Some people, they jump kick to see it just for show. So just to kick for the reason. I think, am I protected, Shepherd?
Yes, you are.
Okay. In terms of you and Levy, there's something which is worrying me. I'm from that, my background is from that society to talk about the poor. I know how I grew up. Anybody can make a difference of myself. Some people, they seem to talk on our behalf. That is correct that Sandra has done something to exempt the taxes, and the majority of our people are using taxes in particular in housing. And we respect the findings which the agents which you gave to make their search. I'm just asking myself to those people who feel that you can use the fuel levy. In terms of economy, fuel is volatile. So if fuel is volatile, it's because we don't have that good in South Africa. South Africa is trying, but we don't have good oil to manufacture some of the. So how are these people are feeling about us? Because if you can check, even the social network, the people who are commenting with you and me, what type of people? Are people who wear? The people who don't, like ourselves, is very difficult because you can't afford. Yes, I concur with you with that question which you were asking about some people who are calling that people must boycott the public transport. Therefore, the thing, you know, the call is nice to those people, because they don't stay where I am coming from. So please help us. Help us. In which sense, I want you to request you to help us. What is the difference between toll gate and e-toll? Because You know what Shepperton? I think toll gates are more expensive than e-tolls. People are making a lot of noise with e-tolls instead of going to toll gates. I'll put an example. If you're from Mpumalanga, if you're from Komati, in Komati Port, somewhere there, in Komati, you go to Malelani, there is a toll gate. How much is it? It's about 50 something, right? You go to Waterfall Gorge, there's another one, which is about 50 something, or 70 something, right? You go to with the middle there, there is another one, which is about 60-70 something, right? You go to this area, another area, Pretoria, right? There is another one, there is a big one before you come to Pretoria. So how much you spend per day? So may you please help us so that in future when we advance our discussions, we can therefore discuss that how do we maybe pardon and reduce it a bit. We don't say we don't want it. To our friends, yes, our roads are mountainous and they are so good now. They are a little bit bigger. They are helping us, but it's too much. Rather than those who doesn't want you to pay at all, you should pay. And what is worrying me, most of us is right here. Our leadership, we're part and parcel of the signature of this development of infrastructure development. It's quite a campaign now in 2000, right? 2000, yes, 2000. Masakane campaign. All provinces, 9 provinces, signed for infrastructure development. But there is a practical question in practical, because theoretically it's fine. Practical, when it's implemented, it starts to make noise. But we need to find out what is the difference so that we can make it neat. And then another recommendation is that, at least before I summarize it, I'm just summarizing what the recommendation. Another recommendation, please tell us. If we need a law, tell us so that we can make a law. If a national road, if it's under SANRA, I'll put an example like M70, from Spring to MM, when it comes to the national road, but because of the short space when it's via BFR, inside BFR, it becomes a local road. The question is one, does the local municipality have the capacity to build the same road? The answer is no. It's no. What I'm recommending is that let us agree that we need a carver to assist those small municipalities because they depend on national. I'll put an example. Must do the part of it. Most of the cities, they depend on national. That's why the caliber of roads and the type of roads which they have here in Western Cape and Deffen and Johannesburg, they are the same. Then they don't have the category of local government and what national is doing the same all over. That law must be applied everywhere, not in the metros alone. That's what I want to recommend. And then another one is that, yeah, I think I will put my head on that one there, except to request to appeal that some of the recommendations I'll be very much happy. If very soon they can maybe respond to you, that what they feel about some of them, because they have a direct impact to the local government. That's why other people are saying our local government is definitely because they depend on the national government. It's not money from them on the local level. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ramakrishna. Are there other honorable members who live at Sunaga Lodge and would want to have a second fight? Can I get an invitation?
Okay.
Otherwise, we are one and this also.
You want a second fight?
The statement made going forward. Considering that you have to manage your electricity, but at the same time, eating away from that. Because if you were to ask them to do that, you're not going to change. But if you come back for the plan, then the plan is better to manage the plan over 10 years rather than to come up with that. So I just want to understand. If you don't have it now, cash is something that we can work on. And we could deal with it. The second one is in relation to the economy, the issue of 80% set aside. I think it's a good thing we should support as a community that has it. Because it's more kind of a collective stance in the end. But my question really, I don't know whether is the one you call the number, is the number equal to money. The envelope sometimes can lead you into a garden path. Sometimes it can give you the number. I'm more interested that if we talk about that, we should actually look at, quantify that in terms of what money, what value we're talking about, not just the envelope. That may well be the valuation of envelope, if you like, you understand what I'm trying to say. But maybe if you could help us to understand that in time to come. The last one, on your challenge slide, that in 57, you I think that's a crux of the problem. You talk about insufficient integrated planning and. So perhaps that's the crux of the problem. Because if you were to address that particular aspect, of the intermediate part of the rest moves and public. You would probably address the issues that you're talking about becoming the funding issue. But I mean that is understood. All over the world you look at the funding models, including the behavior management of mode transport. Following the human test to private behavior to the benefit of the public. So if you're not addressing that particular aspect, you're going to continuously go and continuously behavior of the private would always outpace the public. And that's what you're going to end up with. So I think for me, that's a part of the things in terms of how to solve the problem. That's the cut of the thing, that integrated. Because then you start to put premium into the behavior of passion once you've resolved the national picture. So maybe, Chair, I was want to suggest that perhaps in the time to come, that's probably not necessarily the time for premium. I think that's a more transport department responsibility. That conversation that we need to have in terms of addressing that particular, I have an interest that we should as a committee have some conversation with the department around that particular aspect. Because otherwise you're going to have year after year you're going to have this. Year after year you're going to require to build the freeways. But the freeways are always going to continue to outpace the public transport. And there is a hazard problem. Subways which was never used, where people have their own VA cars and they're building fuel. And unless you start that particular aspect, you are going to have. But this is a discussion maybe for the, and I'm sorry that I'm raising it with you, but I'm interested that you've raised it. And as a department, maybe it's a discussion, a conversation we need to have. Would you include it into that and for future kind of thing?
Thank you very much. We have overstayed a bit, honorable members from the DA and the host have since left. I'm sorry, CEO, Mr. Ali, I think we see the same note on the issue that you mentioned, I think it's 57 years.
the challenging amount of challenges. I believe here, critical is that we should be able to assist the community to develop a policy which will be together with the department, which will be an inclusive from local, provincial, and national government, so that we are able to deal with the hiccups and the issues that some members have been mentioning here. So that if they ask me, and it becomes a seamless interaction of the road infrastructure in the province. But I think critical, having listened to the members, is the question that we should all be talking to and thinking out loud around is the funding. Do you have any other models that you can be able to propose to the national government in terms of the funding of the infrastructure, not necessarily on the road, but the infrastructure in the public of our society? And as a state-owned enterprise, I think it will be very important that we start looking at the lessons that we have learned within the past 2 years, so that they can be able to guide us as a committee as to what are the other relevant issues that we can be able to manage. Because for sure, if you take the lessons that you learned, including some of the transactions which have not been that has been fraudulent and not really to the interest of the services that we are providing, definitely this will be able to assist the government, and in particular, whether it's legislation, whatever the outcome may be, the lessons that we have learned. We didn't pay school fees for nothing in this regard. And I think what becomes critical is also how do we handle this thing? Because like we have been repeatedly saying, there are judgments and judgments that have been that are there. But we still maybe have been held or don't even guide our community as to how to do this, because when there has been a judgment which actually, whether it's in your favor or in the favor of the others, we have to accept the outcomes of the court. But what becomes critical here is communication to our communities out there, because we are indicating the resistance that is found, particularly in the Kaohsiung province, in terms of the inquiry, that you've got the judgment in your favor. This e-tolls are legislated at the same time, which actually you are in complying with the legislation, having been tested even in the court of law up to the constitutional court, and you were found not guilty. It is very important that as legislators, and also with your help, and also with the department, we should be able to communicate to our constituencies out there as to what are the critical things, so that they can be able to work around and ask for sure. And they need to assist us as to develop a communication strategy. For us in particular, as members of parliament, that when we go out into our positions, we are able to deal with these challenges, we are able to talk so that people can be able to understand that the user pay principle is something that is part of the contributory mechanisms to what the funds that the that Parliament allocates to yourself is not sufficient to be able to do the role as you are talking. And honourable members here have been talking so much to particularly the Norman's Land roads that you spoke to, the rural roads that are inaccessible, so that the more we talk about it, the more people understand, the better it will be for us as the people in the society to assist, to work contributing to the fiscal in terms of making sure that the infrastructure development is maintained to a standard which is acceptable international standard, which actually will be acceptable. But lastly, I want to say, with your vision, which actually talks to infrastructure and state of the art infrastructure in Southern Africa, the region, it becomes very important that we should also look towards interaction with legislature in different countries, which actually will be able to live up to this ideal of your vision of being a developmental approach, your vision of wanting to see all the road networks in the Southern African region being proper roads, and that, I believe, will be able to work towards the vision of the National Development Plan, which actually we want to see Africa being self-sufficient and being able to sustain itself. I'm going to allow you to respond to some of the questions, but for sure, we would also really appreciate if you can be able to send documents that members have spoken to, particularly the research that members have spoken to, and also how we will be able to engage with other departments, because for sure, we're just thinking out loud, DDE will be interested, because challenging scholar related issues, and other departments that can be able to use the municipality in the grant will be very, very keen also to want to have those researches, but even other policy documents that we believe we should be able to use in making sure that we live up to the ideal of the National Development Plan.
Thank you, Chair. There's a number of things which have come up which are pretty cross-cutting in that, but I want to deal with firstly to start off about the roads that people were talking about in terms of quality of the construction of the roads and that, and particular roads that were mentioned, like the R74. I want to just inform the honourable members that those are not sunrise roads. They do not fall under jurisdiction. They are not proclaimed national roads. Things that have been raised about that are all provincial roads. But we're also aware of the result of the R74 and what the issues are around the R74, because we get the same complaints as well, especially from the small businesses which unfortunately are closing down and some of them close down. Those are not sunrise roads. I want to make that very, very clear. I don't want people to confuse. I sat over here and I spoke about the condition of the sunrise roads, how we actually do that. And somebody still believes that we may have been misleading and we are not doing that. Those are not sunrise roads. I want to make that very, very clear to people. I also want to make it unclear to people that I have never been a proponent of a fuel levy. A fuel levy distorts, at the end of the day, the benefits. It doesn't encourage the shift from private transport to public transport. God, I made it clear in my presentation. Let me illustrate this with what the natural thing is as well. The Road Freight Association, if people will recall, were also going to be party to the court action. We're also going to be party to it. We managed to convince the Road Freight Association to go and do their own studies. Right? The Road Freight Association did their own studies. And they said that if they had to increase the fuel by 13 cents a litre, they can't just increase the fuel level by 1 or 2 cents. They think that they're going to cover up with 15 billion rands of backlog and what we want to do in terms of the NDP that we want. 13 second contributor they found that it would have costed the hauling industry an additional 300 million rand per annum. An additional 300 million rand per annum. That's not how to say. Tony Independent Road Freight Association. Read the reports. They are available on their website. So 300 million rand per annum extra is what it would have costed. Now that could have been passed on as a consumer. And that is what the other people don't take to recognize. That a fuel levy is passed directly onto the consumer and it is inflationary. Now when inflation goes up, the business concern for the moment is to who did it affect most in terms of inflation. Now, on the user charge, if you use the road, you pay for it. If you don't use it, you don't pay for it. It's a direct user charge and we encourage the shift from private transport onto public transport. Now the shift that has taken, the increase in the ridership in Gautrain, has been a direct result of what has happened in Gautrain. It's been a direct result of that. And we encourage that further. Because when you were planning this, we had a lot of discussions with the Gautrain designers, etc. And they designed the memory serving correctly. I will have to check this, but the memory serving correctly. They were designing for checking 5% of our traffic, and we wanted 7% to go off. Not 5. That's how we worked with them. When I spoke about the insufficient cooperation and integration of that, there's quite a bit of cooperation that takes place at the project level. But what we wanted to be taking place at a much higher level, and not only at the project level. So the issue around fuel levy is well, and you can see the numbers. If you go down to the website of National Treasury, it will tell you exactly what they've been collecting. You're collecting less, and one of the reasons you're collecting less is that our vehicles have become much more efficient in fuel. That is what's happening. Secondly, that if we keep on this and we're saying that we can put it on the fuel levy, apart from the public transport, discouraging people to use public transport, it adds further onto the pollution, etc., that we're talking about that we want to reduce in terms of our carbon footprint. So the appeal I always make to people is that when they throw this thing out, they say, yes. And that's what I said earlier, tax experts don't know, you can tax anything you like. No issue, tax it. What does that encourage? It encourages further tax evasion. Not just avoidance, but evasion as well. Because there are other unintended consequences because we it's very unfortunate. We think of the present, we don't always think of the future consequences. We think that, it's not going to happen. So our people are concerned about that. Yeah? Another thing you take from the future, take our taxis. They say that 62-64% of the commuters in Gauteng travel on the taxis. If you put out the fuel levy, the very poor that you want to protect from increased cost, that cost will be passed on to those commuters. Because there's no way that you can go around and pull up at the service station and say, I'm a taxi, I'm not going to pay you that fuel levy on that journey. On the petrol price. Okay. Think about the practicalities as well around these issues before we just talk about the fuel levy. We also now talk about this part of that. Let me first deal with the issue around pollution. The pity that the Honourable Member will raise the question around the pollution is no longer in the room. And I thought that the question that he asked in writing is we have given him a clear answer. I'm looking to my colleagues to my left over here because we were party to the corruption. We are the only ones that ready charge against the contractors. Let me make it very clear. We made a policy decision within summer that we will not tolerate any kind of activity, whether internal or external. We will not tolerate that. It really, this thing perturbs us when we see that people become opportunistic terms of how they make use of the public purse. So we haven't made charges, but you explain the process that one has to follow. We have made charges against the contractors. We as Sunrock can only claim for civil damages. And to be able to claim for civil damages, we have to prove the actual damages that we suffered. And that is the work that we are currently, that we have undertaken, that we are busy doing. We've hired people, economists, and estimators, team of estimators, and economists to help us to see as to what are the actual damages that they suffered. If we can't go to court, if I'm sure that these guys will contest it. If I can't go to court and say our damages for 5 rand in the meantime, you know, they're going to prove to me that it wasn't 5 rand, it was 50 cents. We need to be confident. The question arose earlier on as to why do we defend these things in court? Because we always believe we have a case. Others will not be going to. The same way in the collusion. We have a case. But we need to be confident, or sufficiently confident, I should say, have a good indication of that, you know, it is 5 rand and not 50 cents. The significance, the cost of the claim, at least the cost of going to court, etc., the commercial decision that one may have to make will outweigh that. That's what we do. Now, as far as criminal charges are concerned, criminal charges can be brought from what we have been told against the individuals in these companies, past or present. And that decision lies with the prosecuting authorities and not with Sunrock. And unfortunately, the people who write about this, who talk about this, who commentate about this, do not seem to do a little bit of research and homework in terms of how the laws and the justice system in South Africa works. Most unfortunate. So we have all of these things which are saying that Sunrock is trying to be heard there as well. Sounds as if we are trying to protect people. We are not. We make that very clear. We are not protecting anybody. And that's why we've made charges on this. The process to follow up, explain that, and I hope that makes it very clear. Now, why did question perhaps? We should also ask ourselves, yeah? We should ask ourselves, is there another way, what I call, and this is my personal opinion, I'm stressing it, this is not the Sunrock opinion. Let me make it very clear as well before I read about it. Papers tomorrow that Sunrock is saying, not Sunrock, this is me saying. Is there a different way for us to be able to recover the losses that we've suffered? I'm just asking you a question. The phrase that I use is there's some form of restorative justice. That these guys don't get the way that they've done. But there's a wider benefit to society, especially in our rural areas. We all have, I'm sure we all will have ideas in terms of how to do it. But I appeal to the honorable member just to think about that. It doesn't mean I'm going to stop the court process. To make that very clear. Yeah? We are not stopping the court process. And we also remind the House that irrespective of what any losses that we suffer, whether it is through collusion or non-payment, please read the TFMA. TFMA doesn't give Sunrock a choice in terms of whether to choose to go after the losses or not. It compels Sunrock to recover its losses. So, as I said earlier on, we implement government policy, trying to have a manner which is conducive to good governance, is uppermost in our minds. That is why that we've consistently got unqualified reports from the AG. Think please about it. That comes because we are dedicated. We are dedicated to service in South Africa and corporate. We will implement government policy. That's what we do. Tomorrow, if government policy changes, we will implement that as well. But we are not going to make the decision in terms of which of the policies we will implement and which we want. In a similar fashion, none of us in South Africa have the choice to say that this is a particular law I will respect and another one I won't. It is distinguish an example of something that happens when we talk about road safety. Every time we talk about road safety, you see the attack that comes on from our detractors comes on the traffic officer. They're hiding behind the tree. Now, I'm not saying hiding behind the tree, right? But I'm going to debate it on another day. The fact that they're trying to stop me from speeding on the road with their tracking mechanisms that they have on the road. We attack that. You don't attack the bad behavior and driving behavior of the drivers on our roads. Like one professor told me recently at the university, I saw this in the press the other day, the amount of cheating that is on the increase at our universities. The parent comes because they summon the parents to come and speak to the parent and the daughter. The first thing the parent says to the daughter, why did you get caught? Not that cheating was wrong. That's the very system we're trying to over here as well. That's the unfortunate thing. Why? Because some of us are extremely opportunistic. We want to score a particular kind of score and point. Not recognizing some of the damage we do. Now that was really hard speaking. Let me get off that. Also, issue around public participation. Again, the court is ruling our favor on this. So who are we then now to try and question the constitutional court? Just it says that we've done more than we should have. Why don't they accept the decision? Simply because we don't care about the damage it causes to our Chapter 9 institutions. Maybe we should think about our attitude as well, not only how we drive on the road, but how we, you know, the kind of dialogue that we have amongst ourselves, you know, to try and build this nation that we're talking about. Now let me deal specifically with the other issue which has come up, which is also a burning issue, is around the issue around the one thing. Extremely unfortunate in terms of what's happened, and I would be very happy in our world to the committee, to you honourable chair, the written submission that you made to the inquiry, I will send you a full copy of that. We have provided it not only to the inquiry, but to our minister as well. But there's just one particular point that I want to highlight in there, is that the city of Cape Town, I'm not going to mention the date because the date is there, sent us a letter saying that they will not cooperate with us in terms of the relocation of the people in the road reserve over there, without us first having sorted out whether we're going to go ahead and wind this road over. There is a letter, which we've also submitted to the inquiry in terms of our. And once that distinct cooperation broke down, you know, it's very unfortunate that the action they wanted to take in terms of protecting the land has been invaded. And that is what unfortunately that is happening over there. But there is a lesson I think we've all learned in this issue around there, is that how do we make sure that we meet the challenges of infrastructure as a whole, as you rightly pointed out. It's not about any of those. How do we provide the houses that we need to provide? We touch on the issue around the unprepared roads. That's 132,000 kilometers. How do we fund that particular 132,000 kilometers? First of all, in terms of taking the ownership, our understanding is that we have to declare these areas in the core townships through the deeds offers and the survey agenda. Once you've officially declared that in terms of the necessary pieces of legislation, that's the roads that become the ownership in terms of the sphere of government, the applicable sphere of government. Now we talk about this, and I understand our challenges in our rural areas. Make no mistake. We also confess I don't come from the rural areas. We also confess. But I do understand the challenges, because I do visit our rural areas. And that's why you see we will consistently endeavor to make sure that the survey done in 2010, and we've now commissioned Human Safety Research Council to do a follow-up on it. The reason we do that in those areas is to understand the levels of poverty in those areas. 76%, or something like 72%, and I'm quite happy to send again to your office on the chair the survey that the HSRC has done. I think 72 or 76% of the people between Port Edward and Port St. John's live on some form of social grant. Nowhere along that route did we find less than 90% support for the total. That's not what the people were telling us. What they were telling us, please give us a job. We do not want to be dependent on some kind of handout. That's what we're doing, bringing jobs to this area. But like I said, people have taken support in their life. We will defend it in court because we do believe we're in the case, in strong case, in terms of fighting poverty in our country. And that's just why we're doing that. Yeah? If we do actually care, and along the line we do make mistakes, and I apologize for the mistakes we make. And those mistakes that we make aren't made deliberately, they're not claimed. Sometimes they're caught up. You know, and a lot of other things that are happening around you. And you have to sometimes make a decision. Yeah? A sort of a quick decision in terms of safeguarding. Also, what is required of you as an entity in terms of applicable legislation? In a similar way, when I've heard the Honourable Member talk about the roads on the in between going to the city. Our challenge that we face is that if we declare the road through a city a national road, there are conflicting legislations which come into play. Let me give you a simple example over there. For instance, we don't allow advertising, our act, we don't allow advertising in our road reserves and various other things. In fact, there's a whole lot of illegal advertising boards, billboards around the country. Another issue. But that's what the Act says in the regulation. But our bylaws do allow that. We're trying to avoid that kind of space between the different pieces of legislation. I don't know what we do with a lot of the municipalities now is that we will assist them in rehabilitating the road the first time and then they will let them change. And that's what we're moving on towards doing. And if it's a road, for instance, which will carry what we call cruise traffic, meaning to say moving on a national road, we will assist in terms of the maintenance of that particular thing as well. When I was talking about earlier on around the Wild Coast and why we do that, when we talk about the loss of opportunity, the example I gave for the research is shown. Lots of opportunities for those people to get a decent job. The level of poverty in that area, I'll be very surprised if this new research comes out, survey done, if it shows anything different. I live in Cyprus. I go once a month, maybe even 3 months, I go back home into the rural areas. I don't have any idea. But we will make sure that we will continue. That's what we talked about. The loss of opportunity. The issue around the...
In view of the fact that we have run out of time, I would request the remainder of the questions, if you can respond in writing, so that in the next meeting of the committee, the members can be able to get their responses. Members, for sure, you agree with me that you have run out of time. Do you want to continue? Look at that one. Anyway, I will see you out of here. I will take my handwriting in here in front of the public service. Yes. Look, yeah. I think we'll send Sandra and believe that going forward we will be back. But I was more interested. the challenge is when you respond to some of the questions between yourself and the city of Cape Town, as to what really brought about. I assume it's the Rwanda issue that we're talking to, so that we are able as committee to know what really transpired and we will be able to really communicate properly on this matter going forward. On that note, I'm going to be thanking you. Let me also thank the other members of the community who are here. Our support members of the call will be to just remain for 5 minutes so that we can be able to finalize our matter. I'll send you all the community. But I think through the community discussion, there are other issues that we should be able to elevate in the community, which we can be able to take forward to a parliamentary conversation to finalize what we have had yesterday on that group. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. What kind of holidays, but you look at the hostess.
Yeah, hey. Hey, we're finished now.
Yeah.
But when he was responding, we're normally listening.
Yeah.
You can't have all the answers.
No.
As it is,
what they get the answer said, no, you are in the section where I am.
This young man has gone about without a record for so long. Just one alone.
Today in plenary. If you can take us through the minutes.